I proceed now with our subject, which is broadly speaking the unity of the covenant of grace. In case I forget at the end of the hour, will those who have taken the examination please listen to me after the hour in order to try to arrange a time for re-examination? It may not be that we can get 1 hour that will be suitable for all, but we should try. Please just try to see me. I believe you're all here. Now, with our topic, I have come to the fourth point in connection with the passage in Galatians 3, 17 through 22. And that concerns the second part of verse 21. I was just dealing with that at the close of the hour. For if a law had been given which was able to make alive, verily from law righteousness would have been. Now the obvious implication is that it is impossible to attain to righteousness and life by works of law. But what we have to take particular account of is the reason for which Paul appeals to that principle in this instance. The reason is that because of its truth, we are not to find in the Mosaic economy the enunciation or proposal of any such arrangement. Look, the connection between the first part of verse 51 and the second part. Is the law then against the promises of God? God forbid. Or, if a law had been given which was able to make alive verily from law righteousness would have been. What Paul is saying in effect is that we must not interpret the Mosaic economy in terms of a principle, antithetical to promise and grace, for the simple reason that anything antithetical is an impossibility. Well, that God therefore did not promulgate a dispensation on the basis of what is an utter impossibility. In other words, it does not find its organizing and operative principle in a covenant of works. Now five, and finally, we look at verse 1, Galatians 3:22. Which reads, but the Scripture has set up all things under sin in order that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. Ephesians 3:20. So you see, Paul here is appealing to Scripture in support of his interpretation of the Mosaic economy or the Mosaic covenant. He's appealing to Scripture, I say, in support of his interpretation or construction. And by Scripture here, he must mean the Old Testament. And since he has no qualification, he must mean the Old Testament in its entirety. And so, quite obviously, Paul finds in the Old Testament the principles which govern the gospel of grace. He finds in the Old Testament as a unit the principles that govern the gospel of grace. Go back and look at the verses, and that's what he's saying expressly. The Scripture has shut up all things under sin, that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. How do you think that it would be feasible for the apostle to appeal unqualifiedly to the Old Testament in order to support the principle of grace and of faith? It's such a large segment of the Old Testament, or at least such a large segment of Old Testament history, was governed by a principle that is the very opposite of grace. I think you can see the impossibility of verse 22 on any other base than that the unitary witness of the Old Testament is that it shut me up to faith. It's faith to grace. It's grace to promise. Do you see this verse? Brings to clear focus. And I would say into infinity focus. What has been the argument of the apostle all the way along the line from verse 17? And again, verse 22 confirms the interpretation of verses 17 through 21 that I have been presenting. Is not really compatible with any other construction of the relation which the Mosaic covenant sustains to the other covenant. In a word, it is the Abrahamic covenant is the fabric is woven the web of the Mosaic ritual and ordinance. Now that was the reason. You could go ahead in Galatians 3 and take verses 23 on to the end of the chapter and into chapter 4, 6 to get additional confirmation for me. Now, the next passage, I'm going to the next passage is what you find in the epistle to the Hebrews, but particularly related to Hebrews 8:7-15 and Hebrews 10:16-17. However, in these two passages, in these epistles, you have a contrast between the old covenant and the new covenant. Reiteration of what you find in Jeremiah 31:34. A reiteration. Quotation to a large extent of Jeremiah 31:31-34. Now the contrast is between the Mosaic covenant and the new covenant. The terms of the passages make that quite clear. Contrast between the Mosaic and the new covenant. Now, anything that we should find in this is all. The most pertinent to our question. Because if in Galatians 3:17 following, the question is the relation of the Mosaic covenant to what went before, namely the Abrahamic. Now you can use the direction. It's the relation of the Mosaic covenant to the new. You have an matter of a secret here, a very question at issue. What is the proper construction to say covenant in relation to the Abrahamic which was before, in relation to the new covenant which followed? Here we are. You have a definite contrast. The writer of this epistle talks quite frequently about the haughtiness, I'm using English terms, remember, haughtiness, defectiveness, imperfection of the old covenant. Thank you. of less, no place would have been sought for the second. But it was offless. Remember, it was faulty. It was something that was going to pass away. Now you see, here you have the very thing we're interested in. What was the thought of the Mosaic Covenant? What was it? You said, of coming inadequately. What? Now dispensation, now listen, please.
Levitical priesthood and the
Melchizedek. And that is to say that he construes this defectiveness in terms of the Levitical economy. The Levitical economy. And if one thing is obvious, it is precisely this. That the Aaronic priesthood and the Levitical ritual however defective they are is not kept in the times principle of life in contrast with grace. That isn't clear. Nothing can be clear. Before the Aaronic order, priesthood, and Levitical economy had no affinity with the principle of works, because legalism, principle of work, knows no mediation, no sacrifice for sin, no remission of sin. But however imperfect was the Aaronic priesthood and the ritual connected with it, I say, however imperfect was the Aaronic priesthood and the whole ritual associated with it, they bespoke the remission of sin. Every high priest, the writer says, in 3, chapter 8, verse 3, every high priest is ordained to offer both gifts and sacrifice. The Aaronic priest, you see, offered sacrifice first for his own sin and then for the sin of the people. According to the law, all things were cleansed by blood. Hebrews 9:22. The faultiness of the Mosaic covenant resided in the imperfection of its gracious provision. But the fall in the imperfection that would have arisen from a covenant of works. The imperfection of its gracious provision did provide mediation, did for remission of sin, did for acceptance. So you see, the contrast here is all together within the ambit of grace. Now, second consideration derived from the epistle to the and this is even stronger in refutation of the dispensationalist than the one I just mentioned. It is the relation which the Levitical economy sustained to the new covenant. The relation sustained to the new covenant.
That is set forth most clearly in Hebrews 9:23-24.
What does the writer say there?
It was therefore necessary that the pattern in Hodgema, the pattern of things in the heavens, should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands, and he takes them through and teaches you the path, and teach you our told these in all. And he takes up the true, but into heaven itself, now to be made manifest in the presence of God in us. So if this isn't clear, nothing can be clear, and we may have heard the whole. Namely, that the physical sacrifices were patterned after the heavenly example of Christ's sacrifice. Yes. And the Levitical sacrifices were patterned after the heavenly exemplar of Christ's sacrifice. Of course, you can go further. You can say that the whole Levitical economy patterned after the great exemplar that in due time would be fulfilled. And of course, you can go further. You can say that the whole Levitical economy patterned after the great exemplar that in due time would be fulfilled. When Christ shed his blood, entered into the holy places not made with hands, was made manifest in God's presence for us. And therefore, they were, that is, the various sacrifices which were of the Levitical economy, they were patterns, shadows, anticipations of what is central in the New Covenant, namely the high priestly ministry of Christ. Patterns, shadow, anticipation. The writer, you see, calls the Matthew type. He generally turns around and speaks of the Old Testament as type versus the anti-type in theological terminology. Don't be confused by the term that this writer was used. He calls the Old Testament the ritual, the antitype. And Christ is seen to be the type in the sense of the exemplar, that from which the antitypes are copied. That's the usage.
But he also uses the term patterns, you pardon me, Ma, he uses the term shadows, you know, and so on.
Well, let's see. They were patterns. Shadows.
So we what is the defectiveness of consistent? And what is the defectiveness of faultiness consist? Which demanded a better sacrifice? Demanded a heavenly sanctuary rather than a sanctuary of this world? What was the defectiveness? Just that they were shadows. They were only shadows. Patterns. Not that from which you copy, but that which is copied.
And therefore they were not the final reality. But now, the all-important observation for our interest is that according to this writer of the New Testament, the old covenant was after the pattern of that which is central in the new covenant. After that which is central in the new covenant. So what is central in the new covenant?
Certainly not a principle of work. Not a covenant of work. Not legal obedience as the condition of salvation. What is central in the new covenant is the provision of grace. And the mosaic is therefore an adumbration, an analogy of the new covenant. Of its grace, efficacy, and perfection. And you see, therefore, that the whole principle developed by the writer of the Epistle to the Hebrews, the interpretation of the Mosaic covenant in contrast with the New Covenant, did not bring to final realization, did not bring to perfection the principle on which it operated, the principle it enunciated. Nevertheless, the principle is the same. And that which we find in the new covenant
because we all come.
With soteriology, We had, first of all, the plan of salvation. Then we had the inter-Trinitarian economy of salvation. Then we had the covenant of grace, which I dealt with only very briefly. And then, we had the unity of covenant grace. The unity of the covenant in all ages and generations, especially from the Abrahamic covenant on. So now, next, what do we have? We have to deal with the story. Now, this is the doctrine of the person of Christ. It falls within the locus soteriology. And therefore we are dealing with that aspect of the doctrine of Christ, which is conditioned by and related to the plan of salvation, the inter-Trinitarian economy, and the covenant of grace. Last year you dealt with certain cases on the doctrine of Christ, the doctrine of the person of Christ. But the cases with which you dealt last year under theology proper are those cases which are concerned with the immanent relation. The person is Christ. The other persons of the Godhead. And to the economies of creation and providence. The immanent relation. Now you see, we are coming into the field of history, and therefore we are dealing with the doctrine of the incarnate Son of God. The incarnate Son of God. And first of all, under this point, we have the fact of the incarnation. The bell will ring in a second or two, or self-assessment today.